The trades have begun. Hashtag, it's a business.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster, and you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Bball. Go ahead and follow Basketball Monster at Bask Monster, and of course check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net. You're going to want to check out a couple of those podcasts specifically after the events of today. Locked On Clippers with Lucas and Locked On Pistons with Matt. Those guys will cover all the news from the big trade that went down, the Blake Griffin-Tobias Harris trade. I'm going to talk about that today. I'm going to talk about the rest of the games from Monday. I'm going to preview Tuesday's big slate, and I'm also going to shine that player spotlight on Miles Turner of the Indiana Pacers. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start by breaking down the trade, a trade that, as always, comes out of nowhere. This trade has been discussed for months, apparently, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. But then he comes out with a tweet saying the Clippers are in advanced talks with the Pistons about trading Blake Griffin. And this is something I've said, you know, many times on this show, is that often when you hear the framework of a deal, it means the deal has been negotiated and shot down. Except when Woj or Shams tweets it, it'll either happen, you know, half an hour after they tweet it, or it won't happen at all. So we heard that one about George Hill to the Cavs, and they tweeted the details. Nothing happened. So that's unlikely to ever happen now. The fact that it came out, they said this Blake Griffin trade, and you wait, and you go, okay, well, Woj has said it, Shams has said it. What happens in the next hour? Because that's when shit goes down. Happened with the Kyrie Irving trade as well. Hey, this is going to happen. What's going on here? Where did that come from? If it's anyone else who leaks details of a trade, I'm thinking that's never going to happen. If it's Woj or Shams, then I'm waiting in tenterhooks for the next half an hour, 30 minutes, to see if it goes down. And that's exactly what we had go down today. For those of you who have been living in an NBA bubble, we had a trade go down between the Clippers and the Detroit Pistons, a six-player trade which involved draft picks as well. We had the Clippers send Blake Griffin, they sent Bryce Johnson, and they sent Willie Reed over to the Detroit Pistons for Boban Marjanovic, Tobias Harris, and Avery Bradley. The Pistons also sent back a 2018 first-round pick. It's protected up to pick four, so it's almost definitely going to convey. The Pistons could very well miss the playoffs, and that turns into another lottery pick for the Clippers. Unlikely for it to be top four, and I think it's top four protected the year after as well. They also send back a 2019 second-round pick. So all in all, I think it's a massive, massive result for the Clippers. They get out of this contract from Blake, which is obviously huge. It's going to be paying him $40 million when he's 33 years of age, which is going to be a disaster of a contract. Tobias Harris is supremely young. I think he's only 25. He's on a very, very good contract. Yeah, Boban's not the greatest contract. Avery Bradley's an unrestricted free agent, but it helps really open up their books for free agency, gets them out of this deal. And it's also, you know, looking to precipitate deals for other players. Now, these other deals aren't necessarily going to happen. DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams, the two names mentioned. I'm sure they'd love to get themselves out of the Rooster business as well. Danilo Gallinari, who is obviously struggling with injuries, isn't on a fairly long-term, high-money deal. Those other deals, they could happen at some point, and I'm going to talk about that in another section or later on as we go through this trade. But at this stage, we have got the one deal that has gone down, and that is, you know, the essence of it, I guess, is Blake for Avery Bradley and Tobias Harris. So the questions are, you know, what does this do to either team? So if we look at Detroit, Griffin comes in and he becomes the immediate starting power forward. He's the guy that now will play 35 minutes, and not much will really change. You'll have that high usage rate still, I would imagine, because you've got guys like Tobias Harris who had a pretty significant usage rate. Avery Bradley had a significant usage rate as well. So Griffin's going to do pretty much exactly what he did in LA, maybe even a little bit more in terms of usage, but it opens up opportunities for other guys. One thing that I will think will happen to a guy like Andre Drummond, I think his assist numbers will drop. He has had an absolutely extraordinary increase in his assist rate, almost a 300% rise in his assist numbers, and we know that Griffin likes to handle the ball a lot more. The wings on the Pistons, Bradley, Stan Johnson, Reggie Bullock, Tone Tolliver when he would play Toby Harris, they never would handle the ball or drive and kick. So it's a little bit different with Griffin initiating stuff, and I think some of his playmaking will detract a little bit from Drummond. So maybe there's a dip in what he does there. But of course, the big hole that opens up in Detroit is on the wing. You've got no more Avery Bradley. So we've got three players really vying for these two wing spots. It's been Stanley Johnson who started at the three this year, and then he was replaced by Reggie Bullock. Those two guys are in the mix. And Luke Kennard. You could also, I guess, throw Langston Galloway in there, but he's been putrid for the majority of this season. Maybe he becomes the fourth wing in that mix. But it's going to be mainly Bullock, it's going to be Kennard, and it's going to be Stan Johnson, who are going to have to fill that hole that's left by Avery Bradley. And the other thing, I guess, that's maybe a little bit overlooked is that Toby Harris would slide down to the three a little bit more. So Griffin's not going to do that, clearly. So there are more minutes there on the wing as well. That also impacts a guy like Anthony Tolliver. So in those larger matchups, they'd move Harris to the three, and they'd play Tolliver at the four. You can't do that with Griffin. So he moves in strictly as the backup four, with playing a little bit of backup five without having the opportunity to have those occasional 25 or 26 minute role. So his value, I think, drops. He was a really interesting 3-point streamer, but now his upside and to have those 28 minute games is almost entirely eliminated for Tone Tolliver. The question that's on everyone's lips is, who do I add? Is it Reggie Bullock or is it Luke Kennard? And the question is, well, the answer is they're fairly similar in their overall rank numbers. Yeah, Bullock has been way more efficient this season, is at a supremely high 2-point percentage. Both guys shooting well over 40% on threes. But Bullock's been just massive on his twos, and that's giving him a big boost there. Kennard can do more rebounding-wise. He can handle the ball a little bit more. They're both similar level of steals, similar level of points. They're going to see increase in minutes. They're going to see increase in their usage as well, and both are viable pickups in 12-team leagues, but I wouldn't say that one of them is an absolute lock that is a must-own guy. If you're in an 8-team league, I reckon you can leave them alone. In a 10-team league, in some cases, you can leave them be. I would probably take Bullock over Kennard, because as much as you think that the opportunity there is he's a rookie, he's a lottery pick, Van Gundy didn't trade for Blake Griffin to develop youth. That's not what he did. He didn't trade away a 25-year-old Toby Harris to get a 29-year-old broken-down Blake Griffin so he could develop his youth. And it's not like Bullock is old, but he at least has been in the NBA for 3 years, and Van Gundy's got a history of giving his rookies short shrift. We barely saw Henry Allinson at all last season. Kennard has been one of the best players on this team and in this bench, and even when Bullock and Stan Johnson have struggled, he hasn't been given a huge run. But he's going to have to see his minutes increase now. The other guy who gets a more secure role is Stan Johnson. Again, not really pushing to 12-team leagues, though, more of a 16-team to 14-team league fly. He's looked much better of late, but he can't shoot. And that obviously impacts his field goal percentage, his three-pointers, and his overall points per game. He can get some assists, he can get some steals. But again, remember that they didn't lose any playmaking. Bradley never handled the ball or did any playmaking. Toby Harris never did that. So it's not like this huge void that needs to be filled in that. And even if it was, Blake Griffin would be the guy doing that. The interesting thing for deeper leagues is going to be what happens at backup center. I think Willie Reed comfortably moves into that role ahead of Eric Moreland. So Moreland moves to the third center. So in a deeper league, Willie Reed becomes that option in 20-team and 30-team leagues, whereas Moreland, who is doing that, he becomes more of an afterthought there now as well. But the big news in Detroit is maybe a marginal decrease for Drummond. Griffin, about the same, I would guess, but it is a slower-paced team in Detroit, so overall some of his numbers may dip, even though his usage may rise slightly. And then Bullock, Kennard, and Stan Johnson all get a bumper. I'd put Bullock and Kennard pretty much exactly the same. Hey, you take your pick. What do you want? Do you want a bloke who can get you more assists and rebounds? That's Kennard. Do you want a higher field goal percentage? That's likely to be Bullock, and that's probably your two differentiating factors between those two players. Probably of more interest is what happens now for the Clippers. There are numerous questions about this throughout the day, of course. And one of the more common questions that I get is, do I go and add the table Montrezl Harrell now? I got that from many, many people. And I think there's a little bit of confusion out there because if we're basing on what has happened and not what may potentially happen, Toby Harris comes in and takes Blake Griffin's role. Nothing changes for Harrell. He doesn't become the starting power forward. He doesn't get more minutes. Now Harris moves in and plays Blake Griffin's role. We're also seeing Danilo Gallinari likely to return Tuesday, or at least the game after that. Another bloke who will play at the three and at the four. Wes Johnson has upped his game, a guy that can play at the three and at the four. So it's not like there's a shortage there where they're going to say, oh, we have to play Tobias Harris at the three full time and that's going to open up Harrell to play at the four. No, you're going to have Gallinari coming back. You're going to have Wes Johnson in there. You're going to have Ty Wallace, who's looked really good in his value. You're going to have CJ Williams come back, who played fairly well in those positions as well. So Harrell's value doesn't move there. Now, what you could make the argument for is that he gets some more minutes at center because Willie Reed's gone. But when everyone was healthy on this Clippers team, Reed wasn't even in the rotation. Harrell was getting the majority of those minutes anyway. Now, Reed had moved in at a low minute role anyway, but Harrell was clearly ahead of him in the rotation, irrespective of who started when DeAndre Jordan was out. Now, the next question is Josh, what if DeAndre Jordan gets traded? Then Harrell's a must-own guy, and that's true. Unless, like when Blake Griffin got traded, they brought someone back in exactly the same position who would move into that spot. So there's two variables there. Does Jordan get traded? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe no one wants to give him up just to get his bird rights. Maybe that's not the case. It's free agent. Why am I giving up anything for him? Why are we doing anything here? And then who comes back in the deal? Does someone else send a center out who would come in and battle Montrezl Harrell? Now, if you're in a comfortable position, you're sitting comfortably first, second, third, and you're 10 games up on the next team, yeah, maybe grab Harrell and see what happens over the next 10 days. We're 10 days away from the trade deadline, and maybe something along those lines does go down, because if he is forced into a role of 27 a night, then he would comfortably be a must-own guy. But we don't know that yet. So at this point, based on what is currently happening, nothing changes for Montrez. But if Jordan goes and nothing else comes back, or it's a player who's far inferior to Harrell, and let's be honest, there aren't many guys who are significantly inferior to the table. It's not like he's this awesome, awesome prospect. He's pretty decent and he's shown flashes, but it's not like, oh my God, we have to do everything to get Harrell in there to play these big minutes. The other common question is, do I add Boban in 12-team leagues? And I'll put it this way. Boban moves from being the third string center in Detroit to being the third string center in LA. He is not a guy that I believe can play more than 25 minutes a night in the NBA on a regular basis. He cannot survive that speed-wise, size-wise, defense-wise. He'll get cooked in that respect. And you can also make that argument, okay, so if DeAndre Jordan gets traded, Harrell will start and Boban then will give 20 minutes in a backup role. And in 20 minutes, he can be a valuable fantasy guy. We've seen all this. He's 24 and 12 per 36 minutes, high field goal percentage, high free throws. It's all really valuable. But again, Boban's a guy who the theory of, the idea behind the per 36 per minute production makes us all get really erect. But in reality, he can't maintain that role because of his on-court deficiencies and isn't able to maintain that role. So again, if DeAndre gets traded, what's the likelihood of the center coming back being worse than what Boban is, and then moving Boban to the second string and this new guy coming in as the third string? That seems an unlikely thing. But again, like Harrell, if you want to take a flyer on Boban and think that he's going to come in here and play 25 a night somehow, the numbers would work out well in your favor. But as things stand, he is the third string center in LA and won't play every single night. And I think that's a more likely scenario than him having a 23-minute night per role. There are some people who think he's coming in immediately and playing 20 a night, and that is bananas. There is no chance that is happening. I can 100% assure you that Boban Marjanovic is not coming in and playing 20 minutes a night if this roster stays like this. They're not going to come in and say, right, DeAndre Jordan, we've got Boban now, so we're going to play you 5 less minutes per game. Harrell, we are not playing you at center ever again. Boban's getting his 20 and DeAndre's getting his 28. That is something that 100% is not happening. It requires a few things to happen. It requires Jordan to get traded and for the player that comes back not to be better than Marjanovic, for him to move into a decent role. So all this could happen. It could happen, definitely. But you've got to look at yourself. Can you deal with it for 10 days before this trade deadline to work out what the percentage chance of that happening is with all those variables? Does Jordan get traded and does a center come back who is worse than both Marjanovic and Harrell? And you've got to consider whether that is an actual possibility. Look, if DeAndre Jordan ends up in Cleveland and Tristan Thompson comes back, or Tristan Thompson starts, Montrezl Harrell is behind him and Boban's third string. you're in exactly the same spot as before. And yeah, Thompson won't play 33 minutes a night. He might play 27 minutes a night, and maybe Boban then plays more often, but Harrell would still be the backup. There are many, many different things that need to change there. I was not a big Boban guy in the offseason. In the preseason, I wasn't saying that I was interested in him, and I'm still, I know what his deficiencies are, and that is what has limited him through all his time in Detroit the first 2 years, his first year in San Antonio. Yeah, that is what keeps him off the court, despite looking at per 36 numbers and going, wow, look at this. These are fantastic numbers. The other guys who are going to hurt is Avery Bradley, I think, is going to hurt a little bit. And that's not saying much because he was struggling quite a bit. I think he cops a usage hit here as well. And we've got to remember, he moves to a backcourt that now includes Milos Teodosic. It includes Lou Williams. And it includes Austin Rivers, who will be back soon. And yes, he is going to be part of the rotation. You could say that Austin is the fourth worst of those guys. But you know what? Bradley's been significantly terrible for the majority of this year, and it would be actually a close battle. But regardless, that's four guys who could get decent minutes at those two positions. Yes, Rivers can play the three, but of course you've got Wallace, Johnson, Gallinari all getting minutes there too. So how does that all fit in? So I think Bradley loses a little bit of playing time, a little bit of usage as well, because we're talking about his 24% usage and Toby Harris, who had a usage of, 23 in Detroit, trying to replace Griffin's 30. So, and then with the return of Gallinari, with the return of Rivers as well to cut into that. So both of those guys, I think, are going to see a dip in their usage numbers and their overall scoring, even though Bradley's, you know, that might actually help him having less usage because he won't be impacting your field goal percentage as negatively as he was. I don't think that Bradley shouldn't have been owned in 10-team leagues or 12-team leagues, and I don't think this is a spot to go and own him. The Clippers' backcourt is deeper than in Detroit, so he's in more of a squeeze for minutes there. And Harris, yeah, might dip a little bit, but he's going to be fairly similar to what he was before. The other things that could happen, a guy like Milos Teodosic, without Griffin handling the ball as much, he might see his assist numbers rise. So while he might be squeezed a little bit for minutes, and he seems to be limited to under 30 a night anyway, he could see those assist numbers rise, which could give him extra value in 12-team leagues. So that's a possibility there for him as well. I also think Austin Rivers loses a fair chunk of his value. He had a usage of 23 in 33 minutes before his injury. I don't think he's going to be able to maintain that level of playing time or that level of usage as we try to squeeze Harris and Bradley into this team's lineup. So a few guys who might take a little bit of a hit. Lou Williams, probably he's been playing like 35 a night over the last month or so, but for the year only at 31. So he's likely to push back down towards 30, which dips some of his value off. I think his usage will still be fine. Maybe you lose a percent or so there, but his minutes might drop off somewhat too. And the other question is, what happens with Danilo Gallinari? Apart from injury with Gallinari, one of the big things that was disappointing with him is just how infrequently he got to the free throw line, because he wasn't handling the ball at all. And without Griffin, again, Harris and Bradley aren't guys who are necessarily handling the ball and driving as much. Maybe Gallinari can get his free throw attempt rate up, because that is what is the largest part of his fantasy value, is free throw percentage on high attempts. It's what made him that top 60 guy in Denver the last two seasons. So if he can get any element of that back and more handling the ball, more driving, that could actually help increase his numbers. I'm not sure the usage changes all that much, but just that slight change in free throw attempt rate on his 90% shooting will really give him an extra little bit of value. And again, he is very soon to return. So if he's on your waiver wire, he is a guy that I would absolutely add. I think, yeah, Milos gets the extra assist, and I'm not all that keen on Avery Bradley. And if you were stashing Austin Rivers in a standard league without an IR, I don't think you really need to bother with that anymore. So really some interesting things. Guys like CJ Williams, Ty Wallace, Juwan Evans, who'd been big parts of the rotation with this addition of Bradley, the return of Gallinari, I think they're going to find it hard to have significant roles as we move forward as well. So lots of interesting stuff. Both these teams play on Tuesday. We have no word as yet as to whether these guys are going to be in uniform or not. Bradley's also dealing with a hamstring issue that caused him to miss the last game. So there is some uncertainty. So when we get to those games with DFS, it's going to be some pretty significantly large question marks on both of those teams for their Tuesday action. But a huge trade going down in the NBA, something that no one was seeing coming. We're expecting Lou Williams, we're expecting DeAndre Jordan, and probably the Clippers were just like, shit, like, look at this trade. Like, we can get out of $130 million here. We can get a lottery first round pick back. Plus, we can get a young guy on a really good contract. We've got to do it. And I think they come out huge, huge winners in this deal and gives them way more flexibility to do whatever they need to do to get worse, to build up young, to rebuild on the fly, whatever they need to do. I think it's a big, big win for the LA Clippers, despite the fact that you're losing a guy who was a long-term icon of the team for a team that has struggled to have icons at any point in their history. Let's go on now to talk about the actual play that went down on Monday. It was a weird day in the NBA. Of course, when a trade of Blake Griffin goes down, it's always a pretty weird day. The monstrous line of the night goes to Giannis Antetokounmpo, 31, 18, and 6 for Yanni. 1-3 and a block, 10 of 22 from the field, and hit all 10 of his free throws. He was a guy that we thought was challenging for the number one fantasy player this year. Hasn't been the case. Started off that way, but he's dipped down. He's the 7th ranked player over the year, averaging 28.5, 10 and 5. With 1.5 steals and 1.3 blocks. And that's where his value has really dipped. Last year, he was at 1.7 steals and 1.9 blocks. This year, 1.5 and 1.3. And it doesn't seem like much, but that is a huge, huge difference. Going from almost 2 blocks to under 1.5, it drops you from being the number 1 or number 2 player to being the number 7 guy. If you drafted him at number 1 or number 2 and he's number 7, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't destroy your team or anything like that, but that's where the value has been lost. He's also lost some assist numbers, even though, in weirdly, the last month, his assist numbers have been up, even though you'd think maybe they were higher before Eric Bledsoe arrived. Still not hitting his threes at a high rate, even though he has hit 6 triples over his last 4 games, with Joe Prunty being a little bit more receptive to him shooting them. He's shooting them more. He's hitting them at 55%, but it's the attempts that are up, the makes that are up, and this team hasn't lost since Jason Kidd was fired. Something to definitely keep in your mind when thinking about the Milwaukee Bucks, that they have not lost a game yet since Kidd, the worst coach in the NBA, has gone. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Tyler Ulis of the Phoenix Suns. Ulis played two minutes in the previous game, but in this one came off the bench, played 32 minutes, and had 13, 1, and 7 with 5 steals on 6 of 13 from the field. Of course, Devin Booker was out in this game, so that gave him that extra playing time. We thought it would be Isaiah Cannon. Isaiah Cannon started, but as we've seen pretty much all season since Eric Bledsoe was told to go home, that the Phoenix point guard situation has no consistency and no reliability, no predictiveness. It can happen, it can change at any point, and just because that Ulis went off in this game, I'm not looking to grab him. He was literally almost out of the rotation in the last game, and Booker is expected back on Wednesday, so nothing to really see here from Ulis, and his value is obviously really bumped up by the fact that he had 5 steals in this one. The young gun of the night goes to Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics, 26-4 with 2 triples, 8 of 13 from the field, a steal, a block, and hit both of his free throws. He had been slumping pretty hard, as I mentioned the other day when he got the dud of the night. He's 153rd over the last month, but this was a nice return to some form. Yeah, hitting his shots at a much higher rate. This is the first time he's shot over 50% in 2 weeks. And hit his threes at 50%, again, something he had been struggling with over the course of the last couple of weeks. His last month numbers, 31 minutes, 11, 5, and 1, with almost a steal, almost a block, and a little bit over a 3 on, I guess, much worse efficiency than what we've expected, 49% true shooting over that time. I talked about him ad nauseum, how those numbers were going to come down, and this is a more relatively... A number you should expect a little bit more rather than the craziness at the start of the year, but he can up that efficiency from 49 and be a 54 or 55% true shooting guy for the rest of the way, which is obviously really strong as a rookie. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. It's his teammate for about the 89th millionth time. Jaylen Brown is the dud of the night. 9-6-2, hit a 3, no steals, no blocks, 4 of 11 from the field. I'm always going to remember that multiple people traded him to get Bradley Beal in the season's first 2 games, and it's forever going to be astounding to me. He is the 151st ranked player this year, in large part because his free throws are such a large negative, 59% on 3.3 attempts, but Over the last month, he's got it to 65%. Over the last seven games, he's at 78%. So it's trending in the right direction. The problem is he just doesn't do anything with the assists or steals a load, doesn't block any shots. He's not a high-volume scorer, low-usage guy. I don't really ever like this guy as an elite fantasy prospect. I think he can be a decent on-court player. I think the top 40 for him is really out of reach at any point in his career. He was a guy that never translated fantastically coming into the NBA. We saw that last year. We're sort of seeing that now as he's playing big minutes, but it's not really a fantasy-friendly line that he's putting up on most nights. I still think that he should be owned in pretty much every league. 8-team leagues, you probably don't want to. 12s, I would. And 10s, I guess he's a borderline in 10s. It depends on who is on your waiver wire. But he should be owned in the majority of those. We just have to understand that this is more who he is and not someone who can become this necessarily a large fantasy star. Well, I don't think he can become that anyway. I'm going to eschew the question of the day for today because we had such a long segment to begin the show talking about Blake Griffin. We will bring it back tomorrow and go through that then. But what we'll get straight into is talking about all of the action from Monday's actual game. So let's get stuck into that right now. All right, the first game we're going to take a look at is the Charlotte Hornets and the Indiana Pacers. Dwight Howard continued on his merry way, 22-11 with a block. He has been absolutely studly recently, Dwight, as has Kemba, who had 23, and Nick Batum on fire, 22-4-2 with 5 triples. You know I'm an ardent Nick Batum supporter, and I believe he should be owned everywhere despite the struggles that he did have earlier on, and he's starting to repay that faith now. Marvin Williams suffered what looked like a pretty significant ankle sprain. X-rays were negative. He had 2, 2, and 3 in 25 minutes. I'll be stunned if he doesn't miss any time. He is a borderline guy anyway, so if they rule him out for a week, I'm pissing him off. Not worried at all. Well, Frank the Tank will move into a larger role, and maybe you could stream Kaminsky, get some threes, but unless he plays at center, he's never really been an excellent power forward fantasy guy, but if he plays 30 minutes, he'd be someone to take a look at. Cody Zeller is also on the cusp of a return. For the Pacers, Miles Turner. Going to talk about him in the player spotlight. So I'll just mention that he played 21 minutes off the bench and had 22-4-3 with 4 triples. Really starting to show in this game at least, or his last two games that he's really played, excluding that one off the bench, the one before. Some of the numbers that made us think he could become a second round guy. We'll talk about him more in the player spotlight. Oladipo had 25-5 with a 1-1, and Thaddeus Young played 35 and had 16-4-4 with 2 steals. Strong game from him. Sabonis still started 11-10 in 28 minutes. I'm still holding DeMontis. We will see what happens and when Turner gets that starting job back, what happens to Sabonis' role. But for now, I am still holding him. Bojan Bogdanovic was shit. Lance Stevenson had 10 in his 22 minutes. And Daz Collison was pretty good, 13-3-6, enough to maintain ownership in your 12-team leagues. The next game we look at, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Atlanta Hawks. Just a disastrous loss for the Timberwolves. Should never have lost this. Jeff Teague with just 2 absolutely horrendous turnovers late. He was putrid.
My name is Jeff.
And I use that phrase often, but he was disgustingly bad in this one. Teague, 2 points in 35 minutes. He had 10 assists. That's good. 4 steals is good. But 1 of 12 shooting, 2 turnovers, including an unforgivable 5-second inbound violation when they're down 1 with about 30 seconds left. That is disastrous. That is 2 absolute turd burgers in a row from Teague. I have said it many times that I think that Tyus Jones should start over Teague. I think he fits better with those starters. I'm not saying that he's a better player than Teague. Teague is totally fine as a player. He's fine. But it doesn't work having him in there taking 12 shots, missing 11 of them, while Karl Anthony Towns goes 6 of 8 from the field. It's piss poor coaching, it's piss poor point guard play, and it should be corrected. Now, I don't think that there is any danger of Tom Thibodeau benching Jeff Teague for Tyus Jones and playing him a 20-minute role. I think there is zero chance it happens, but it should, in my opinion. Jim Butler, 24-7-3. Well, Townsy, that's a strong line, despite the fact, again, he only took 8 shots. 15-13, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block. Really efficient stuff, though, as usual. Well, 17-4-2 with 4 steals for Taji Gibson, who also had 12 shots. Yeah, him taking more shots than Townsy is poor, too. Wigo had 18-3-3 in a pretty stock-standard night from him. onto the Hawks. Kent Bazemore recovered from his disaster in that last game. 22-4-4, four triples, a steal, two blocks. This is what we've seen from him for most of the season. Needs to be owned, of course. While the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, he was benched to start the second half. 25 minutes, 3 points on 1 of 10 shooting with 4 rebounds and assists. Now, when I did the player spotlight on formerly last week, I made it pretty clear that I think that he should be owned, but I also made it pretty clear that I don't think that he is a great on-court player, and I don't think he's got potential to become a great on-court player, but his opportunity was nice, and that was making him a solid fantasy owned. But if they're going to play guys like Malcolm Delaney or guys like Tyler Dorsey over him, then it's really tough to consider holding. Now, I'm a little bit stubborn in cases like this, and I would probably still hold him, or in the leagues that I do own him, I am still holding him, but this is a definite downward turn. He is not a great on-court player, even though the opportunity has been presented to him. And I never had massive faith in him from the moment he was drafted. I was like, this is okay. But the opportunity heading into this season looked good, and the minutes were still there up until recently. But when you get benched for Malcolm Delaney, that's a problem. And that's something that we will have to evaluate. The Baptist, just 20 minutes, 8-11, 4-4 shooting. You got 10 days to the trade deadline. You hold him until then, despite these minutes. Let's see. Is Ilyasova gone? Does the Undertaker move out? Do they finally decide that, you know what, we don't need 13 minutes of Miles Plumlee in any circumstance, so maybe Johnny can move his value up there and I would hold for those remaining 10 days. Well, Schroeder had 18, 2-11. The next game, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Milwaukee Bucks. Again, the Bucks undefeated under Joe Prunty. No Joel Embiid. After I talked yesterday about him being cleared for back-to-backs, they decided today, no, he won't play. But they do have another back-to-back coming this week, and they have said in advance that Embiid will play in that back-to-back. So with him out, Amir Johnson started, had 5-5 in 18 minutes, while Rishon Holmes had 13-6 in 23 minutes. He will, of course, fade back into obscurity once Embiid is back for the next game. Šarić had 19-9, took a ton of shots, 18 of them. Of course, that will dip when Joel is back, while Benny Simmons had 16-6-5 and Bob Cove 13-6 with those nice defensive numbers, a steal and two blocks. Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot couldn't get anything going. And another game, another strong game for my boy, Justin Anderson. 24 minutes, 10 points, 3 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block. This is a bloke who gets these defensive stats. It is hard for him to get minutes. And with the Bob Cove extension, with Šarić around, I don't know necessarily how he fits in on this team. But over his last four games where he's played over 20 minutes, he has 5 steals and 2 blocks. He scored in double digits 3 of those games, and the other one he scored 9. In fact, in that time, he's a top 100 player in only 22 minutes because he's shooting the ball efficiently, 57%. Steals, blocks, rebounds, threes, and points have been okay for him. And I do like him long term. I think it probably takes 2 years or so before he can really challenge for the top 100, and it's probably not going to be on this team. But as we know, and you would have seen that stat today, is that from the 2009 draft, from the first round, so 8 years ago, only 2 players remain on their initial teams. That's it. Steph Curry and DeMar DeRozan. Every other player from that 2009 draft has now moved on. The NBA turns over, you know, 60% of their rosters in 3 years. I made that number up, but it's around that mark. So things will happen. He will move and he will find himself in a different situation. And if you're in a dynasty league, I would be banking on a guy like Justin Anderson figuring it out in a 30-minute Chandler Parsons-ish on Dallas or in Houston sort of a role. That's the sort of thing I envisage for Juzza. So yeah, have a look at him. But again, it's hard to find those minutes and how they fit in Philadelphia. For the Bucks, Chrissy Middleton, 19-7-6, 2 steals, a block, and 2 triples, a nice game. And the Eric Bledsoe mystery, only 3 minutes for Bledsoe the first 3 minutes of the game, and then didn't play again. We heard nothing about it. There was whispers of an ankle. There was whispers that they didn't like his defensive effort. But after the game, Prunty said that it was because of that sore ankle. He was listed probable against the Nets late last week because of that ankle, and that obviously flared up. If he is out for time, Brogdon will start at point guard. Tone Snell will start at shooting guard, and it bumps a guy like Sterling Brown to become that backup, and he would then have that 14-team short-term value. The Muppet, 30 minutes, 13-4 with 2 blocks for John Henson. I think he is a must-own guy. I've said that plenty of times. But the other big news that happened today is Jabari Parker announced that he will be back on Friday. Now, he is going to be back on limited minutes, at least up until the All-Star break, which we're talking about, I think, 6 or 7 games until that All-Star break for Jabari. He'll probably have back-to-back restrictions. I think there's only one back-to-back before the break. Is he a must-own guy? It's a good question. I don't know. It really depends. He's not a must-own guy because not every team should be looking to grab him. Because if you're in a playoff battle, then having a guy who could be limited to under 20 minutes a game for 3 weeks might put you completely out of playoff contention. But if he gets 30 minutes a night, he's going to be a top 100 guy. I don't expect him to be a top 50 player where he was pushing last year. 2 ACLs in the same knee is a real struggle. We've seen it with Zach LaVine, really having big issues defensively. Getting his shot selection right or getting just the legs in his shot has been really tough. And that's going to be almost doubly as important for Parker. So he is going to have efficiency problems. The minutes will be really slow to be ramped up. So no, he's not a must-own guy, but if you're in a position of power, maybe you add him and you see what happens over these first 3 games. Maybe they come out and surprise us and play him 26 a night off the bat and you go, shit, all right, let's see where this goes from here. But if you're in a really tough spot, battling for that 6th seed or 5th seed, and you're expected to hold a bloke who's going to play under 20 minutes a night for 2 to 3 weeks, that's a pretty bitter pill to swallow, because while he might be useful in the fantasy playoffs, he probably won't be there to experience it. And again, just these guys returning from ACLs, their defense struggles, their time on the court struggles, and they struggle to get their shot. They shoot it short a lot, can't get their legs, and that is a real concern for a guy like Jabari Parker here. The Phoenix Suns and the Memphis Grizzlies. No Tyson Chandler hit on a back-to-back. No Devin Booker, no Marquese Chris. So we had just weird rotations. Joshy Jackson sure shot the ball a lot. 16 shots, 20 points, 8 rebounds, 29 minutes for Joshy. Look, you're not going to be a standard league guy this year, I'm pretty sure. Well, Jared Dudley played a developmental 28 minutes. 13-1-3 for old retirement bod. 2 steals in that time with 2 triples. This was, of course, because Chris was out and Dragan Bender struggled. He had 0 points in 20 minutes. Troy Daniels hits his threes. Always going to hit threes. Going to be a really good 3-point streamer, but very much nothing else. 9 points in 23 minutes. Well, Greggy Munro.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
He started. He played 23 minutes. He had 14-6-3 with a steal, which is brilliant. But my estimation is that on Wednesday, he goes back to being a DMP CD. Could he find himself bought out on another team? Yes, the likelihood of that is less than 50%. And much like we're talking about with, hey, do I take a flyer on Boban? Do I take a flyer on Montrez? Do I take a flyer on Jabari? Where are you? If you're trying to battle yourself for a playoff spot, holding onto a 0 from Greg Munro for the next 10 days, is that going to actually help you? And then if he doesn't get traded, then the buyouts don't normally start happening until March. Where does he... you can't deal with that. So maybe you want to hold him for the next 10 days. But again, having a 0 on your roster for 10 days might lose you 1 or 2 categories. And that might actually be key in you making the playoffs. So it is very much a individual decision. Onto the Grizzlies, Tyreke Evans returned but did not start. Still was good. 27-1-4 in 26 minutes. I think that regardless of if he starts or not, the minutes will be back up. He was returning from an illness. Marc Gasol, only 24 here, but had 12-10 in a comfortable victory. Well, Jarrell Martin, 9-4 with 2 steals and 3 blocks. Jarrell Martin's better than Jermichael Green, in my opinion. I've never been a big Green fan. He's much older. I think he's 5 years older than Jarrell Martin. And I know they signed him to this restricted free agent deal. Not a huge deal because he's not that good. Green is not a 12-team league guy. Look, Martin might be, but when Green comes back, I imagine a 24-24 potential minute split, and that's not helpful for anybody. Wayne Seldon started over Tyreek, 17-2-6, shot the ball well, but his previous couple of games were pretty piss poor. So even if, say, Tyreek did get moved, I wouldn't be looking at Seldon as this awesome option who's going to start putting up top 50 or top 60 numbers. Maybe he's a top 120 guy in 30 minutes. We can look what he did the last couple of games when he played those big minutes. He had nothingness. This one, pretty good. The occasional good game gets chucked in, but not much otherwise. Dylan Brooks had 12 in 26, while Ivan Rabb had a nice 10-7. Especially hitting all 6 of his free throws. That's a pretty solid night from Rabb, one of his better nights in the NBA since he made his debut. Well, Deontay Davis, really like Deontay, 12-4 with a steal and a block in 17 minutes. Definitely a name to watch if on the slimmest of chances, Marc Gasol does get moved, which I don't think is happening. Deontay has got the most upside out of any of the young players on this team, I think. The Miami Heat and the Dallas Mavericks. Hassan Whiteside, well, the minutes were limited, and we thought there was a chance he wasn't going to get back in that fourth quarter, but he killed it. 25-14 with a block against Dallas. It was always a good opportunity, but were the minutes going to be there? It turns out there was enough for him to put up good numbers. Well, Joshy Richardson, he just does some other stuff that you don't see from guards. 14 points with 4 triples, but 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 4 blocks. That is massive from Joshy. I'm one of the best guys that you could have grabbed off the wire at the start of the year. Obviously, I didn't drop him anywhere. You heard me extolling his virtues quite a bit. Not quite to the same level that Matty Smith does, but yeah, massive Joshy Richardson fan. Tried to buy my one of those Heat Vice jerseys in the Joshy Richardson. Of course, none available. Hopefully, they can re-release them and I can get one of them. Jimmy Johnson had 6 points with 6 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. That line's getting close to what we saw from him last season, but I'm still holding. He is a borderline guy, while Tyler Johnson, 8-3-3 with 2 triples. And I get the feeling now, with Justice Winslow running back up point guard, that maybe Tyler isn't going to be a 33 minutes per game guy, and they keep him in this 27-minute role, and that would limit his value in standard leagues. The Duke hit 3 triples. That's what he is. He scores. He hits threes. That is exactly what he does. While Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk were both a little bit limited, given the way Whiteside played. On to the Mavericks. Wes Matthews was limping at the end of the game, but had a huge one. 19-7, 3 triples and 2 steals, and did it efficiently on pretty large volume, 58% on 12 attempts. He has struggled quite a bit this season, except for recently, where he's pushing back to similar to his Portland numbers. We talked about him the other day when referring to how guys go post-Achilles, and his last season in Portland, he was the 49th ranked player, averaging 16, 3.5, and 2. Well, over the last month, he's at 16, 3.5, and 3, hitting 2.7 triples and shooting at a very similar efficiency. He had a true shooting back then of 59%. He's got a true shooting over the last month of 59%. So it's 3 years later, but the last month has been reminiscent of Portland Wes Matthews, which is a guy that can challenge for that area. So yeah, I think he probably should be owned in all leagues. I probably need to give his field goal percentage an update on Basketball Monster, because it's a little bit low given how improved he has been this season. So have a look. If Wes is available, you can go and add him. Dirk had 10-6, while Dennis Smith 14-2-10. Maxi Kleber couldn't reproduce what he did the other day, unsurprisingly. He is up and down, and once Dorian Finney-Smith and Seth Curry return, if they return, yeah, Kleber might find it a struggle to actually maintain his position in the rotation. That remains to be seen, but there is a distinct possibility that he could find himself on the outside looking in if those guys ever do return. And I quite clearly have my doubts that especially Seth will actually get back and play at all this season. I don't think that's going to happen. The last game of the night, the Boston Celtics, Denver Nuggets. Really, really good game. Fun game. Talked about Tatum, talked about Jaylen. Kyrie had 27-3-6 with 2 triples. Banged his leg late in the game, but he was all right. They also went quite big in this game to combat that Nuggets big front court. So Daniel Vanilla Tice played 21 and had 11-3-4, while Marcus Morris had 14, but only played 20 minutes. That is definitely a matchup situation that's based on, of course, who they're playing. So Morris could play 28 one game, he could play 20 in another one, and that's going to have an impact on his overall playing time. As you're well aware, I don't believe that Marcus Morris is a 12-team league player, and therefore would not be owning him in any sort of situation like that. With Shane Larkin, a late scratch, Terry Rozier played 30 minutes. When this guy gets the minutes, he puts up numbers. 8-9-6, a steal, a block, and 2 triples. With Marcus Smart sideline for the next 2 weeks, Rozier is definitely a borderline 12-team league guy and a guy you could definitely consider owning, especially if this injury to Larkin keeps him out a couple more games. Mason Plumlee suffered a calf injury late in the game. They're calling it a calf strain. He has automatically been or already been ruled out of Tuesday's game. They think it's not too serious, so that's good news, but this is going to open up some value for Trey Lyles and for deeper leagues for Ken Fareed. Yeah, Lyles is a guy that I'd immediately go and grab. If I've got an expendable roster spot, he had 20 and 7 with 4 triples in 27 minutes here, Lyles, and is likely going to start, or they could put Babyneck back in there, but Lyles is going to get more playing time against the San Antonio Spurs, while Ken Fareed is the only other guy who can really hold down the center spot behind Nikola Jokic, who had 24, 11, and 10. Plumlee had been putting up good numbers, and he was actually a standard league relevant punt free throw guy. Let's see how long this keeps him out. I wouldn't be dropping him just yet because it appears like maybe it's not quite as serious as we hoped, but calf injuries can be a real prick. So let's see what the diagnosis and what the MRI from Tuesday brings. Gaz Harris had 15, 1, and 4. And the Blue Arrow had 14, 4, and 8 back in his starting role. Fartin Will Barton played 44 minutes. I cannot get my head around this guy being a good player. 19, 7, and 7. The stats are there, but I don't know. That was just a weird endgame sequence. No timeout called with 5 seconds left. And I'm all for not calling timeouts, but not when it's all about getting Will Barton to just drive and take a wild shot that doesn't even make the distance. He is just out of control at times. I don't buy him as a good player at all. And I've said this plenty of times. I just think that his standard league relevancy has got a very, very short shelf life, and he could very comfortably find himself in the Jay Crowder bin quicker than many will realize. All right, that wraps up all the action from Monday's games. I'm going to take a quick break because I've spoken, I feel like I've just put together, or not put together, but just said way too many words all at once there, and my throat is very dry. I'm going to come back to shine that player spotlight on Miles Turner and preview a big, big 9-game DFS slate. I'm going to play a song by Big School called I Pay My Taxes, and then we'll be back to talk some DFS. Let's shine that player spotlight on someone that people have had many, many questions about all season, and that is Miles Turner of the Indiana Pacers, a guy who I thought was going to take a real big step forward this season, to really assert himself as the number one or number 1B player on the Pacers. I had a lot of faith in Victor Oladipo. I didn't expect this from him. But Turner has been a disappointment. He has marginally increased his usage from 20% last year up to 22%, but he's playing only 29 minutes per game, and he played 31 last year now. So a large portion of that is injury related. He's had some issues at the start of the year with a concussion, which has really impacted him, and now had that elbow problem, averaging 14 and 6 with a 3 a game, which is almost double what he did last year with a 3. So that's good. Still blocking over 2 shots per game, but he's seen his efficiency drop, and especially from the free throw line, where he's gone from 81 to 75, so from a positive there to a negative value, and that's impacted him and keeping him as the 50th ranked player for this season. I still believe in Miles Turner because I look at that and go, well, I know he can play 3 to 4 minutes more per game. His per 36 numbers are not too bad, 17.5 and 8. His rebounding numbers need to improve, but he was a much better rebounder in each of his first 2 seasons, so he can improve in that area. He's upped his playmaking a little bit, and the shot blocking has gone up there also. He's got room to improve his efficiency. He's taken his three-point game to a much better area. Now, steady improvements from 23 to 34 to 36% in his threes. And over his last six games, he's actually shooting 42% from three. So he's got the ability to be a 1.5 to 1.7 threes per game player. I think he can get to that at some point. Maybe 1.5 is a more realistic expectation. A 1.5 threes, a 2 to 2.5 block per game. But he really needs to be able to push from 14 points a game to 17, from 6 rebounds to 8.5. And that's sort of what we thought he'd be able to do this season, but it clearly hasn't been the case. I think that his upside is still very high. This is still just his third season and has been derailed with injuries. Remember, he started off the season, first game, had 21 and 14, 34 minutes, 4 blocks, and he went, bang, let's go, it's on. And then he had that concussion, and then he missed the next 7 games and came back and played 24 minutes, 35, 26, 27, 26, and was quite limited in that time. And yeah, he had some struggles before this elbow injury, a weird 1-point game, a 9-pointer. But there are plenty of decent games mixed into the game log of Turner, some big block games, and I really do think that concussion has caused a problem for Turner this season. We also have to not discount the fact that he has had some injuries throughout his career, that broken thumb in his rookie year. He was quite healthy last year, but now 2 injuries this year. It is a little bit of a concern. But I think when we overall look at what Turner's season is going to be, it's going to be a significant disappointment. But the reduced minutes is going to be a large part of that. And then we just got to hope he can up that rebound rate, which may never happen. He's been hovering around the same rebound rate most years, 8.8, 8.3, and 8.0 this year. So a slight decline over each year. But the positive is the assist rate has jumped by 33%. We've seen a 100% increase in his three-point rate. We've seen an increase in his block rate. And what we've also seen is a dip in his steals, which I think can come back up too. So if his owner in a dynasty league is just like, and people have this thought, this guy's a bum, this guy's terrible, try and buy low. Try and get him for a guy that's not a top 50 guy, a top 70 guy, a top 75 guy, maybe if someone just doesn't believe in if they think that Sabonis is going to maintain that starting role, which I don't. The team is still better with him on the court. 2.1 points per 100 possessions better this season versus last season. And it's not because his backup sucks, because his backup has been Sabonis. And Sabonis has been quite good this year. But the fact is that the team has still been better with Turner on. Now, last year, they were a plus 8.2. So it's obviously dipped pretty significantly from there. But he's a big, big positive in his defensive box score plus minus. He's been a positive with his VORP and his BPM over the last 2 years as well. And above average PER and above average true shooting percentage, and you were talking about huge block percentage as well. So a lot of the advanced stats like him. The on-off stuff is in his favor, definitely, and I think we can chalk up a decent level of his struggles to injury this year. Not all of them, by any means. The rebounding I don't think is necessarily caused by that, but some of the less aggressive nature of his play, the lower minutes can all be attributed to that. And I still think that he has got top 30, maybe top, probably top 20 upside. Just not sure if it's going to require an increase in rebounding rate and a 3-4% increase in usage, which might be tough, but he can get to 2.5 blocks. He can get to 17 and 7. He can get you 1.5 threes, and that definitely pushes you into that top 20 consideration. He's never going to be a 20 to 24 point per game scorer, I don't think, given what we've seen from him in 3 years. But he can be better than this, and I still do like Miles, and I still think we're going to have a better second half of the season from him versus what he's had to begin this year in this injury-plagued third season. Remember, it is just his third season as well, so he does still have got a long way to go in his career. The perfect DFS lineup on FanDuel included Tyler Ulis at 36.7 and Terry Rozier at 32.8, Chrissy Middleton 44.4, and Farton Will Barton at 38.9. Yanni had 60.6, Joshy Richardson 37.1, Taj had 39.8, and Jason Tatum 39.2, while Hassan Whiteside had 45.8 for a total of 424, and that cost $59,900 on DraftKings. Ulis had 33.75, Middleton 43.25, Bazemore 39.8, Trey Lyles 36.75, Whiteside 48, Wes Matthews, 37.25. Yanni had 64.5. And Jason Tatum, 38.5 for a total of 341. And that cost the absolute maximum $50,000 on DraftKings. This is going to be a long podcast, I can tell. You know, when you talk about for 20 minutes about Blake Griffin to kick things off, that sort of makes sense. Let's move on to talking about these games that we do have coming up for Tuesday. The first one of those is the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Washington Wizards. John Wall is labeled doubtful, and I think that John is at significant risk of missing a couple more games. Someone tweeted at me today, is John Wall going to get shut down? I think there's pretty much zero chance of that, but his knees have been a bother since the beginning of last season. He's already missed some time this year. I think a couple of games is definitely going to happen for him. So that opens up Tomas Satoransky. He's at 4,500, and while he only played 21 minutes in that last game, he still put up 24 points, which at 4,500 is absolutely bringing back value. If he plays 28 minutes, then he can push through to 30 quite comfortably. So I like Satoransky here. You could also take a flyer on the guy who played more minutes and put up more points, and that is Timmy Frazier, who is now at 5,500. So FanDuel's gone sick at bumping him up. He put up 40 points in that game, but in Wall's prior absences, even when Frazier started, he did jack shit because he was getting outplayed in every single one of those games. So while I would look for Frazier as a tournament option here, at that elevated price, it takes so much of the appeal away. Russ is at 12,500. That is just extraordinarily high, but it's a great matchup. On a 9-game slate, I reckon you can do better than spending that much on Westbrook. We know how good he is. He's averaging 63 over the last five, so there's no reason to completely fade him, but just when you've got other options that might enable you to get better options at other spots, that's something worth considering. And it's always like, oh, who's the better play? Who's the guy you should pick? Well, it all depends on who else you're wanting or you're looking to fit around him, because you might be able to get Russ, but can you find enough cheap options? And you might, because there's going to be some weird stuff happening with the Clippers and the Pistons with some potential there. So you might be able to fit those $3,500, $4,000 guys in who realistically should be a five or five and a half, and putting them around a guy like Russ, that could definitely work for you. Bradles-Beals at 7,900. He struggled in a few of the games with Johnny Wall out. I'm okay with going back to him here. I like this spot for Beal, so I'm in there. While Terry Ferguson and Alex Abrines for the Thunder aren't really going to get anything going. At small forward, Kelly Oubre is at 48. Tournament for Oubre. He's got an opportunity to absorb some usage. Definitely not a cash guy. While Otto Porter really struggled in the majority of games that Wall missed to begin the or at the beginning of the year. I don't like him as a DFS guy in general. And with Wall out, extra attention, more, you know, contested or self-created twos, it's not really the best thing for his game, and that's what enables it to struggle. So somewhat of a fade guy there for me. Paulie George is at 8-4, absolutely fine, a pretty solid floor, I believe, averaging 43 over his last five, can be looked at here. At power forward, Mike Scott, 3,700, probably not, even though he had a big game in the last one, that means he's probably not due for one for another 2 weeks. While Mallow at 6,100, that's getting into the reasonable price range, probably with other games on, not the one I want to go to. While Markieff Morris has played much better lately, and I don't hate using him here at 5,500, he's got 30 plus minutes in the last two games, plays well against the Thunder. I think this is 30-point territory for Markieff. At center, Steve-O Adams, 7,100. Igortat is an okay matchup for him. He's struggled a little bit, only 25-point average in 27 minutes the last three times against the Wizards, but a lot of that was not in the games where he is the Steven Adams of this season, of course. So he is at 7,100, I think worth a look without being a lock, while, of course, we are fading Gortat pretty significantly. Over on DraftKings, I like Russ at 11.7. That's really strong, I think, for cash and for tournaments. While Satoransky at 45 is also in play. Now, Timmy Frazier at a much more reasonable 4,100 should absolutely be in your GPP considerations. Paulie George at 8.2 is fine. I think Beal is not in a good spot on DraftKings, with Steve-O Adams at 65 is pretty decent. And Markieff at 55 is a bit of a toss-up, I think, for the DraftKings value. The next game is the Nets, the Knicks. The Knicks are favored by 5. The total is 215.5. Caris LeVert has already been ruled out. Joakim Noah is doubtful, not that anybody cares, while Enes Kanter has a cut lip and he is probable to play. Spencer Dinwiddie is down at 5,500. That is a big, big dip. I'm on Spencer Dinwiddie here. Good matchup against the Knicks. No LeVert. Yes, D'Angelo Russell is around, but at 5,500, I am in on Spencer. D'Angelo's at 4,700, starting to show a little bit, but I still don't think that we're going on him at that sort of a price tag. Jarrett Jack at 5,000, Frankie Ntilikina at 35, Trey Burke at 39. Well, Burke seems to be the flavor of the moment. Really hard to have any faith in Ntilikina. Burke, you might want to throw into a tournament, especially in such a great matchup against Brooklyn. But working out what Jeffy Hornacek is going to do with that rotation is it's not the ideal scenario. Timmy Hardaway is at 6,400. That price it's putting him right in the zone where he needs to be, and that means we're not able to extract as much value out of it as we would like. 5,400 for Courtney Lee is cash worthy, but not tournamenty. And then you got Source Castillo at 3,700, who should be back in the rotation with LeVert out, but with D'Angelo also playing, he won't be able to do what he did in that last game, and that was put up 28 points in 33 minutes. The Blue Swimmers at 45, I have little love there, while Damari Carroll at 55 is, I think that's a fairly strong situation for Carroll, with LeVert out especially. Jumpin' Joe Harris at 39 is always in your tournament consideration because he can drop 30, especially when one of those wings or guards is out. Mike Beasley, Lance Thomas, Doug McDirt, no interest. At power forward, Porzingis. He is at 8,800. I love this matchup for Kristaps. I feel like it's almost a 45-point floor, which maybe that's a little bit aggressive, but I think that's the sort of zone you should be aiming for. I'm in on Kristaps for cash here. Quincy Acey, who is likely to start at power forward with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson out, he's at 3,600. I think he's worth a tournament flyer. He can be one of those weird guys who drops 23 or 24, especially with the elevated minutes. There's an opportunity at a cheap price, one of those guys that you can slide in with a Russell Westbrook on FanDuel to help make the salaries match. At center, Kanter's at 6'8". Centers against the Nets generally put up big numbers. I'm always a little bit cautious about Kanter, but 6,800, he's worth a look in a tournament. Koch at 43, absolutely a tournament worthy guy, because again, centers against the Nets, they're yielding tons and tons of points. Well, Jared Allen at 3,700, I don't hate going with Jared Allen here. He's played quite well recently. In fact, he's averaging 18 over the last five and 25 over his last three games, which would comfortably beat that $3,700 price tag. I'm not going in for Jahlil Okafor, despite the fact that he had 31 in 24 minutes in the last game. Maybe he does see a boost, but of course, I will only be looking at him as a GPP guy and not really interested in any cash spot. On DraftKings, not as many guys that I like here. Porzingis at 8,100, I think is good. Yeah, Kanter's probably a little bit overpriced. Dinwiddie at 65 also. Hardaway too high. Courtney Lee not giving me the value. I can throw my cock in a tournament. He's at 3,900. Jumpin' Joe's at 41. There's not much that I really look at and go, yeah. Trey Burke at 37 in a similar spot to on FanDuel as well. Let's move on now. We've got the Timberwolves and we've got the Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 6.5 and the total is 218 points here. At point guard, Kyle Lowry is at 7,700. Bit of a negative matchup for Kyle, but I think he's a 40-point possibility, 45-point possibility, so I like him for tournaments but not for cash. Well, Jeff Teague at 5,700.
My name is Jeff.
Shithouse. The last two games, definitely shithouse. But this is an opportunity, I think, to go against the grain in a tournament and throw him in there. If you're running multiple lineups, he wouldn't be my number one tournament point guard, but he has shown the occasional big game in Minnesota, and maybe he can get it turned around here. Delon Wright, Freddie VanVleet, who went off in the last one. Really hard for me to spend $4,900 on a guy who's going to get under 20 minutes, which is Fred VanVleet, but yeah, twice in the last three games, he's exceeded that value. Just the likelihood of it happening is pretty minimal. DeMar DeRozan at 8,500. I think that's probably just a little bit high against this Timberwolves team. While Wigo at 6,200. Actually been consistent. In fact, his lowest score in his last five on FanDuel is 26 points, which is a pretty bloody solid floor over recent times. And he's been putting up some okay numbers. So I think that he's not, if you're desperate, he's not a bad $6,200 shooting guard that you can look at. At small forward, you've got Jim Butler, $9,000 dues. Yeah, I'm all about Jim here. He averages 60 against the Raptors in the last three. I think this is 45-point territory. Really, really like this for Jim. You've got CJ Miles, who I'm not really interested in. Nemanja Bjelica's back to the bench. And, of course, the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
Yeah, probably not going to use him. Just mainly wanted to play that drop. Power forward, Serge Ibaka, $5,700. I think that's not a bad cash play for Ibaka. Get your 26 or 27. And maybe there's a bit of upside there as well. But I don't mind that. Well, Taj at 54 is a strong, strong cash play who I don't think has very much tournament upside. Jeng, Siakam, no. At center, Jonas Valanciunas at 5,900. This bloke is averaging 45 points in his last three games. In only 25 minutes, this is a real negative matchup, but it's an opportunity for the Raptors to stay big with the way that they play. Can Valanciunas stay with Towns? Can he stay with Taj Gibson? That's a possibility. Put a Barker onto Towns and he stays on Taj, and that could give him 26 to 27 minutes, and that would enable him to get close to that value or at least be able to have an opportunity to smash through, and that's what gives him some tournament appeal here. Towns is at 9,600. He dropped... Yeah, still drops big, big numbers despite this really pedestrian usage that they're giving him. I like Towns here. I think it's a decent spot. Pirtle, Bebe, not really feeling too much about either of those guys. On DraftKings for this one, Townsie at 9.2, I love. Valanciunas at 56, I love. I think they can both actually be considered cash. While DeRozan at 77, that's super cheap for DeMar. Still think it's a little bit of a risk in cash, but definitely for tournaments. While Ibaka at 5,000, I absolutely adore that. That is a fantastic price for Serge, and I'd be all about that. Jim Butler at 88 has some strong value, while Wiggins at 63 probably moves into fade territory on DraftKings as opposed to where he is on FanDuel. Let's move on to the next one. It's the Kings. It's the New Orleans Pelicans. No spread out for this one because we don't know if Malachi Richardson, Garrett Temple, Zach Randolph, Costa Kufos, Vince Carter, or Skel Labissiere, we don't know which of those guys are going to play. I can 100% assure you that we don't know what the starting lineup's going to be for the Kings. There's just no way of knowing anything that this team is going to do. For the Pelicans, Tony Allen is questionable. He is probably going to slide into the rotation, take DeAndre Liggins' minutes as the Pelicans stay small and play Darius Miller and Dante Cunningham at power forward. You know, Liggins inexplicably got 18 minutes in the last game, and Allen could work into 10 or so of those. Not going to be too much of a DFS factor, though. At point guard, Rajon Rondo's at 5,500, shithouse for majority of this season, averaging 14 over his last five games. The matchup is a decent one for him, so if you're going to do it, you do it in this one, in your GPPs. While De'Aaron Fox at 57, coming off a strong game, I reckon Fox is going to have through-the-roof ownership. I think he's a decent cash guy, but the ownership for GPP could be a concern. Georgie Hill at 49, we don't want anything to do with that. At shooting guard, Bogdan Bogdanovic has been not good recently. 5,100 price tag is a dip. I think it is worth looking at him as a tournament guy here. Well, Drew Holiday at 8,500. Love what Drew's been doing. That is getting a little bit too pricey, though, for Drew. He had 50 in that last game, Sons Cousins. I would look at him as a tournament guy, but I don't feel strong about him in cash. Well, Budrick Hield, revenge game time. 5,900 for Bud. That is too high for me to get anywhere near in cash. You could look at it for tournaments, but I don't feel good about it. Small forwards, you got Etuan Moore at 5,700. I like what Moore does, but I don't like that price at all for DFS. Darius Miller at 47 is a little bit too high. Dante Cunningham and Justin Jackson, yeah, nothing to be overly excited about. Let's go with Tone Davis. He is at 12,500. That is big, and it's very much in that realm of how you slide in a guy like Russell Westbrook. Yeah, definitely something to see there without Boog around it, and you should be getting a 55 sort of minimum level, but there's an element of risk of finding the right guys to fit. Well, Labissiere at 5,400 with the unknown status of him, plus we don't know if they'll play him 18 minutes or 28 minutes. Very, very tough to use Labissiere. At centre, we know Willie Cauley-Stein is out, so Costa Kufos at 4,000, I think is absolutely worth a look, especially if we have no Zach Randolph or if we have Labissiere out, then Kufos can really easily bring that 20-point value in there. While Papillanis at 35 minutes, well, the more centres that you lose, the less likely your young centre is to play, according to Dave Yeager or that bloke that replaced him when he almost fainted. So that was weirdness, but that's the Kings in a nutshell. Let's look on DraftKings. Tones at 11-4, Tone Davis I like. And then Bogdan, Budrick, and Rajon Rondo as tournament guys. 5,000 for each of Bogdanovic and Hield. I would take Bogdan over Bud, while Rondo at 48. They all have some tournament value. And Foxy's at 5,500, not bad there. Not much else really standing out as supreme value on DraftKings. Let's move on to the next game. It's the Orlando Magic, and it is the Houston Rockets. Alright, where are we for that one? No spread currently out because we don't know the status of Chris Paul and we don't know the status of Aaron Gordon. So some big names there that we have to pay attention to. Evan Fournier is probable. If Gordon is out, we're really going to be cranking up our Mario Hezonjas and maybe even a little bit of value for Kem Birch there, who might even get to 20 minutes and they might try him alongside Bismack or at least move Mo Spates' minutes all to the power forward position. But Mario Hezonjas, the guy you want there. If Chrissy Paul is out, we really elevate Jim Harden's value. We elevate Eric Gordon's value, and Gerald Green, with Trevor Ariza already out, Green becomes a guy who absolutely becomes a part of the conversation. Chris Paul's at 10-4. I'm not going to be using him with his doubtful or questionability. 7,000 for Lord Alfred Payton. Don't love the matchup for him. Probably a fade spot there. Augustin Mack, no. Shooting guard, let's go. Jim Harden, 12,100. I prefer that to say Russ Westbrook or to Tone Davis, both guys over 12,000. So Jim is fine. Or Eric Gordon at 54. All about that for Gordo. Less interested if Paul plays, but given how good the matchup is, the ability for him to pop off and that potential extra role, I think there's a lot there for Eric Gordon. Fournier's at 64. Nothing. No good. Small forward. John Simmons, 4,700. That's a strong, strong fade from me. PJ Tucker, Gerald Green at 39. All about Gerald. If Chris Paul is out, I think there's something there. Well, Hezonja at 41, of course, we're all about him in tournament. So they'd be some guys that you'd throw into a GPP, even together, if you don't have the news. And if you get that Chris Paul, Aaron Gordon, both ruled out, then both of those guys give you a really, really large boost over some of the other guys in the field. At power forward, Mamute at 4,300, who will likely start with Trevor Ariza sidelined. If he was 4,000 or 3,800, smashing it. At this price, he can go out there and score. He gets some steals. He can rebound a bit. I think he's got a 30-point upside here, which makes him a tournament guy, but I don't feel really good about him for cash. Ryan Anderson, no. Well, Kem Birch at 46. I'd like it. It's just too high, man. 4,600 for Birch, not happening. Center, Clint Capella, 7,500. Yeah, I think it's worth having a look at him here. Tournaments and cash has some value. Well, Biyombo at 55, I'll probably end up fading him, and I won't be using Nene or Mo Spates, I wouldn't have thought. Maybe if Gordo's out, you can have a look at Spatesy. On DraftKings, I love Harden at 11-2. That is really, really brilliant value that could only get better. Whereas Birch at 38 is in a much better spot. 3,800, that is really where you can use him as your differentiator in a tournament. And Mamute at 4,200 has a lot more value on DraftKings and on FanDuel. Eric Gordon at 63, probably you only want to use him in tournaments unless we get the Chris Paul news, and then you could consider him in cash. I wouldn't want to use him in cash if Paul is playing at that elevated salary. Let's move on to the next game. It's the Cavs and the Detroit Pistons. I don't know if Blake Griffin, I don't know if Willie Reed or Bryce Johnson is going to play. Well, Johnson's not going to play anyway. I don't know if they're going to play. So the Pistons could be in a quite decimated state. The Cavs are favored by 2 on the road. The total is 218.5. They should welcome Dwayne Wade back, who's missed the last 2 games, personal reasons after the death of his agent. There is value aplenty on the Detroit side, and there could be even more. at point guard. Ish Smith's at $6,000. I think that he could be a GPP fly with Avery Bradley out. He's not one of my strongest options, but he's absolutely in play. While Isaiah Thomas at $6,200 hasn't been really sniffing around that number too much, probably a little bit too high, but I get the feeling we might get a good Isaiah game, but that's truly just a gut feel spot. At shooting guard, here we go. Lukey Kennard, $3,700. All about it. Have to take more minutes. Yeah, with Avery Bradley gone, he's going to have to step up. And yeah, we're talking about a 25, 30-point ceiling here at that salary. Absolutely needs to be used. J.R. Smith, the plumber. Some decent games from him lately, but they haven't really translated to big DFS numbers. Minimum salary, but maybe. But with Dwayne O'Wade back, probably not. Wade at 4,300 would be a tournament guy, I think, here in this spot. At small forward, Reggie Bullock, 3,800. Totally in on him. I think he's brilliant for cash and enables you to get those $12,000 studs in. Love that for Bullock. LeBron James. $11,400. Yeah, in. Love that. Really, I think that probably the best of the high price guys. I love Jim Harden if Chris Paul's out, but I'm all about LeBron here. Well, Stan Johnson at 43. Less confidence in him versus Kennard or Bullock, but has some GPP upside. Dropped 32 in that last game, and it is a good matchup for guys that play along the wing. They've done quite well against the Cavs all season, so Stan is definitely in play. At power forward, Blake Griffin is at 8,700. If he plays, I'm totally okay with using him, but if he is out, it opens it up for Tone Tolliver at 3,800, and he is a guy that you do want to have in your tournaments. On the chance that, or if Griffin is ruled out, I'd be all over Tone. He played 40 minutes the last game against the Cavs. That was the last two times. The last time these two teams played was their actual last game. He played 40 minutes and had 31 points in that one. So I am all about Tone Tolliver if Griffin is ruled out. Jay Crowder and Jeff Green, very little to say with those guys. While Kevin Love has been changed back to a power forward on FanDuel, he is at 7,000. They actually gave him the ball in the last game, and it resulted in a win, and it resulted in good numbers. 35 points here for Love, really just a tournament guy given the way they use him. Tristan Thompson at 4,000, very, very little interest in using him, while Andre Drummond at 10,500, that is really, really large for Drummo, and with the unknown of Griffin around, if Griffin plays, probably fade. If Griffin's out, maybe a tournament, but I don't feel awesome about it at all. On DraftKings, we have got a similar sort of style. LeBron's at 11.3, Reggie Bullock at 47, so less appeal for Bullock on DraftKings, but still valuable. Luke Kennard at 41 and Stan Johnson at 39. Johnson probably the most valuable on DraftKings, where you look at a guy like Bullock as more valuable over on FanDuel, all to do with their prices. And of course, Tone Tolliver at that 4,500. If Blake is out, there is value there. I like Drummo at 9,300, especially if Griffin is not ready to go, and Kevin Love at 72, we're just looking at him as a tournament sort of a player. Getting through this, even though it is a really long-ass show, so I do appreciate it if you have stuck with the show. The Nuggets and the Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 6.5, and the total here is 201 points. Mason Plumlee has been ruled out already for Denver, so he is no go. We don't know if Wilson Chandler is going to be playing either, so there could be some value opening up for Farton Will Barton, and Trey Lyles is the other one who's going to have some increased value. At point guard, DeJounte Murray is at 6,300. He's been putting up 30-35 a night over the last five, which is really good at that sort of a price tag. It's a good matchup for DeJounte. I'm okay with using him here, depending on what other options you've got around. Pat Mills, Manny Moutier, Tone Parker, nope. Well, the Blue Arrow, let's just fade nearly everyone who goes up against the Spurs, and that's pretty much what we're doing here. Farton Will Barton at 6,000. Yeah, no, can't trust it. Dan Green, no. Gaz Harris, 71, probably a little bit high. Again, the Spurs, shithouse. Manu at 4,200, really tough to use him. Kyle Anderson at 55 has struggled in a big, big way. I'm okay with throwing him into a tournament here. I think a turnaround game is an absolute possibility. While Baby Neck at 43 could play at power forward and play 34 minutes. If we don't hear about it, he is an interesting tournament guy at that lowered price with large opportunity potentially looming. At power forward, Aldridge is at 9,000. I'm okay with using LaMarcus here. Decent matchup. Fairly solid floor against this Nuggets team, where you got Lyles at 5,900, who becomes a really strong tournament guy with Plumlee out. At center, Jokic at 9,700. I'd fade it because it's the Spurs. Powell at 6,600. I think that Powell is a genuine tournament guy here. Averages 41 the last three times out against the Spurs as well. On DraftKings, Aldridge at 8,000. I love that. And I actually do like Gaz Harris here at 61.
Nice, Gary!
Of course, we can look at a guy like Kyle Anderson at 47 for a tournament. Trey Lyles at 51, really, really strong. But against the risk of playing the Spurs is something that is important for us to take into consideration. Let's move on now to the second last game of the night. It's the Golden State Warriors and the Utah Jazz. Rocket Rodney Hood has already been ruled out, and Steph Curry appeared on the injury report probable with right shoulder soreness. He has been incendiary since returning from his ankle injury, just shooting at like 50-plus percent on three, just absolutely out of control. The Warriors are 7.5-point favorites, and the total here is 218. At point guard, ravishing Rick Rubio's at 51. With Rocket out, his numbers have been much improved. I think he's actually worth a look here, and I wouldn't hate using him in cash. I probably wouldn't do it, but I think that there is something that you can look at there with ravishing. Well, Steph at 10,000, that's a big price rise for Steph. It's a lower paced game. Can he drop 50? Of course he can, but I'd look more at him as a tournament guy here. At shooting guard, the Don, Donovan Mitchell, 7,300. Had 36 the last time against the Warriors. The numbers have been a little bit lower recently. I still think this is a good spot to use him, while Klay Thompson at 63, not really getting it done, so not keen on that. At small forward, Jingling Joe's at 45, fade. Kevin Durant at 10-2. I think that's not bad for Durant. A strong cash play, at least. Iguodala, Royce O'Neal, Joe Johnson, nothing to see. Well, Draymond at 8,000. The lower-paced game, I think, leads me to fade him, just given the salary. At center, you've got Zaza. No, you've got Rudy Gobert at 8,200. Centers against the Warriors, we know the general rule, but Rudy has been able to buck that a little bit with a 41-point average over his last three games. I still am not feeling super confident about using him. He probably wouldn't be making it into my lineups. Where are we looking at now? Our DraftKings, Durant at 9.8, I love, and the Don at 6,900, really strong. I think Steph is a bit high at 10.5, Draymond at 7.8, and Rudy at 7.5, probably both fades there for me, while Ravishing Rick has lower appeal. I didn't talk about Derek Favors. I don't think he's a great option against the Warriors. The next one we're up to is the Trailblazers and the LA Clippers. In LA, the total is 2.5. No, the spread is 2.5, and the total is 221. We don't know if the traded players will play Toby Harris. We don't know if Boban Marjanovic. We don't know Avery Bradley, who's also dealing with a sore hamstring. And then you've got the Rooster, who is recovering from that partial gluteus tear, a torn arse. Will he be back? So lots of opportunity could potentially open up here. Shabazz Napier is at 3,800 as a point guard. I don't care. Milosh is at 4,700. If Toby and Avery and the Rooster can't go, I think that Milosh is worth a GPP look. That's about it. Well, Dame Lillard at 91, I think, is in a good spot here for a decent performance. Shooting guard, McCollum, 7,500. Love the matchup for CJ. Don't feel super good about him for cash, but I think that there is some value there. Avery Bradley, I care little for. Well, Lou Williams at 8,900, that's too expensive, I think, for Lou. Now, if Toby doesn't play and Bradley doesn't play, then so much usage is going to be funneled through Lou, and that would absolutely make him more useful to you. But if those guys do happen to play, I think that's probably a little bit too high of a price for Leap and Lou Williams. Ty Wallace, 4,400, likely to lose a significant chunk of time, especially if everyone plays. But if they don't, then he's in play, but really hard to rely upon what he can do. Evan Turner is back after missing the last game. He's at 3,700. I reckon you can actually get cash value out of Evan, get 21, 22 points, and that gives you enough to get those $12,000 guys in. So don't completely write off Evan Turner. Well, Wes Johnson at 45. Wes would be a GPP guy if that stack of players don't actually play. At power forward, the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Which one is it today for the Chief? At 5,200, I think that this is good territory. I think that he is worth it, but you never want to rely upon him for cash. While the table, Montrezl Harrell, 4,100. If Toby Harris doesn't play, we should be all aboard the table train. 4,100 would be a brilliant spot. If we don't hear about it, then he is an excellent GPP guy. Otherwise, he is going to have cash value, whereas Toby Harris at 7,000 is a strong fade if he plays. As for the Rooster, no way I'm going at him, even though he is at 4,500. I just think they're going to be really cautious with the minutes here. At power, or not power forward, at center, DeAndre Jordan, 7,700. In on that, love it. I think there's 40 points here we're looking at for DeAndre. Really, really strong. While Yusuf Nurkic at 6,000, that salary makes it really interesting. But he has been shit for the majority of the time. Still think that that's worth a tournament look just because of how low that salary actually is. On DraftKings, Lillard at 87, I like. Lou Williams at 82, I love. DeAndre at 68, I love. And the Chief at 51. I think you can actually use Al-Farouq Aminu at 51, even in cash. McCollum is at 7,100 tournament play. And, of course, the table at 41. Really, really strong upside option there, assuming that Blake is out. And I guess if Blake, not Blake, if Toby is out, if Harrell has to start at the four, then you might actually run into a situation where Boban can become useful, because then he would have to absorb those backup center minutes. So that's something that you will have to pay some attention to if Griffin, or it's not Griffin, if Harris, it's going to take me a while to not have Griffin on the Clippers if Toby Harris doesn't play. Over on Yahoo, let's go through some options over on that site. For tournaments, we've got Bogdan Bogdanovic, Budrick Hield, Markieff Morris, Kelly Oubre Jr., Eddie Davis, Wes Johnson, Costa Kufos, The Table, Jarrett Allen, Tone Tolliver. And for cash, I've got Mario Hezonja, Quincy Acey, Luke Marmute, Stan Johnson, Ken Birch, Luke Kennard, Reggie Bullock, Milosh, Darius Miller, Alan Crabb, Thomas Satoransky, De'Aaron Fox, DeAndre Jordan, Kristaps Porzingis, Jim Harden, and Tone Davis. On Moneyball for tournaments, DeMar DeRozan, Etuan Moore, Jonas Valanciunas, Rondo, De'Aaron Fox, D'Angelo Russell, Markieff Morris, Darius Miller, Teodosic, Jumpin' Joe Harris, Timmy Frazier, and Quincy Acey. And for cash, we're going Marmute, Stan Johnson, Kennard, Koch, Reggie Bullock, Satoransky, Eric Gordon, Rick Rubio, DeJounte Murray, Don Mitchell, Draymond Green, Drew Holiday, Bradles Beal, LaMarcus Aldridge, Kristaps, LeBron, Jim Harden, and Tone Davis. And to round things out, draft stars. For tournaments, we've got Spencer Dinwiddie, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Rondo, Ish Smith, Ken Birch, Timmy Frazier. And for cash, it's Acey, it's Marmute, it's Kennard, Stan Johnson, Reggie Bullock, Satoransky, De'Aaron Fox, DeJounte, Etuan, Isaiah Thomas, Gaz Harris, The Don, DeMar, Drew, LaMarcus, Bradley Beal, Kristaps Porzingis, Jim Harden, and Tone Davis. That is a monster podcast that I hope you guys got through to the end. I hope you enjoyed the trade silliness that has kicked off already with Blake Griffin moving to the Detroit Pistons in exchange for Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley, with some other flotsam thrown in there. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. It's one of the best ways that you can help support this podcast. You can also find it on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can subscribe, give a thumbs up, and leave a comment. Check out Basketball Monster, where I am the lead fantasy analyst. If you don't know, I am Josh Lloyd. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. Check out Locked On Pistons. Check out Locked On Clippers. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Garrett Temple.